Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
This is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service. Media Network, a weekly review of what's happening in the international communications business, hosted by Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.
Hello, glad you found us, and welcome to a newsy edition of the programme, and we solve a mystery that's been puzzling some of you.
And we start in Israel, and we've been getting quite a lot of emails, which apparently originate from a report by Mike Brand on the Newsnight website in London. He reports that the Voice of Peace, the offshore pirate radio station that broadcast for more than 20 years promoting peace and discussion between Jews and Arabs, is to return to the air this coming weekend.
The station closed down and scuttled its original ship in 1993, when its founder, A.B. Nathan, considered that the peace process was proceeding well enough that the station was no longer required. Now that the Israeli government decided to license pirate stations that have broadcast for more than 5 years, and with an increasing level of political tension in the region, A.B. and his family have decided that the time is right for the Voice of Peace to go back on the air. The medium wave frequency is the same as before, 1540 kHz, as well as FM 108 MHz. The new vessel, simply called the New Peace Ship, will set sail from Jaffa Harbour on Saturday the 20th of March at 17 hours local time and position itself off the Israeli coast. Broadcasts are expected shortly afterwards.
From somewhere in the Mediterranean, we are the Voice of Peace on 1540 kHz.
The station will also be available on the internet. Several website addresses have been registered, but the easiest to remember is www.thevoiceofpeace.co.il. Once again, www.thevoiceofpeace.co.il. And I know that Andy Sennett of Radio Netherlands Interactive Department has just posted an extended illustrated feature in our online e-zine called Real Radio.
Turning now to real pirates, and we've had a handful of reception reports from Germany, from listeners who've monitored 6284.1 kHz a couple of Sunday mornings in a row, and heard what appeared to be Radio Netherlands testing in English and Dutch in the middle of the maritime mobile band. This is apparently a rather weird practical joke by a Dutch pirate radio operator. It is not us, and therefore we can't verify any of those reception reports.
The International Organization for Community Radio, known as AMARC, is organizing a special media event as part of its contribution to the European Week Against Racism. They're setting up a special station called Radio Without Frontiers. They're coordinating events from a studio in East London. Programmes will be broadcast this Saturday, starting at 20 hours UTC.
The website is at www.amark.org, and that indicates that the first hour of the marathon event will be broadcast by a shortwave station in Switzerland. Paula Hardwick of AMARC Europe is on the line from Sheffield in the UK now to explain what happens on Saturday.
Well, the programme on the 21st of March is a 28-hour broadcast, which will be broadcast by satellite and internet and shortwave radio to Europe and beyond. So the broadcast is multilingual and will bring together a team of journalists and radio broadcasters and anti-racist campaigners to help us coordinate the broadcast, which will go out live. Now, we will be broadcasting from London, but the broadcast will also be broadcasting live from other locations who will take the signal and broadcast their own programmes on Radio Voice sans Frontières. So we're also broadcasting from Belgrade, Berlin, from Turku in Finland, from Radio Villarreal in Portugal, and other countries like that. Now, the broadcast will also be picked up by ComradSat, which is the Australian satellite network service. So a series of community radio stations in Australia will also receive the signal and rebroadcast the programmes.
And what do you hope to achieve by the 22nd?
By the 22nd of March, we hope that thousands and thousands of radio stations would have been mobilised and been exposed to anti-racism messages.
The shortwave transmissions for Radio Sans Frontières are going out on three frequencies: 3905 in upper sideband, 7590 kHz lower sideband, an 11470 kHz upper sideband starting at 20 hours UTC. And the transmitters, as we said before, are in Switzerland.
Summer's coming to Radio Netherlands, and that means the new season of safaris is scheduled to start soon. Here's your chance to determine where Jonathan and Diana go on their frequent flyer miles. Will it be Australasia this time? Or what about radio developments in Southern Europe? To participate, send your ideas to media@rnw.nl or to Media Network, Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222, Hilversum, the Netherlands. The best ideas get t-shirts. The worst get thrown out. Sorry. So be the best and help us bridge the information gap on the 1999 Media Network Safari Tour.
There's decidedly a touch of spring in the air at the moment. And on Sunday, March the 28th, Radio Netherlands, along with many other international broadcasting stations, is making some seasonal changes to the transmission schedule. That's the day the clocks go forward by 1 hour in many parts of Europe. And in the case of the Netherlands, we are then 2 hours ahead of UTC.
Our free programme schedule on Target has been sent out to tens of thousands of people on our mailing list. It used to be printed together with our Spanish language newsletter in Costa Rica. Radio Netherlands has a training centre there. But a change in postal charges in Central America has meant that it's now more efficient to print and distribute the magazine from the Netherlands again.
All the details of the magazine are also posted in the English radio section of our website, which is currently being revised for the spring and summer season. Naturally, we are aware that not everyone writes in for a printed schedule or has access to the internet. Many people just tune in by accident.
So here are the details of our English language schedule as from Sunday, March the 28th. Grab a pen and paper. Let's start with broadcasts to East Asia and the Pacific, which start at 0930 UTC on three frequencies. 13710, which is new, 13710, as well as 12065 and 9820 kHz, both of which we're using now. The transmission lasts for 2 hours.
At 10:30 UTC, we have the 2 hour lunchtime broadcast to Europe on 6045, and there's a slight shift to new 9860 kHz. Media Network airs at 11:50 UTC in that broadcast.
So that's 10:30 on 6045 and 9860 kHz. Transmissions to Asia start at 14:30 UTC on a new set of frequencies, which reads as follows: 15590 kHz in the 19-meter band, 12075 kHz in the 25-meter band, and 9890 kHz in the 31-meter band. That's 15590, 12075, and 9890 at 14:30.
We also have transmissions to Africa, which seem to be doing well at the moment, in East and Southern Africa especially. The 3 hour transmission starts at 17:30 UTC on 11655 and 7120, which are new for this season, and the traditional year-round channel of 6020 kHz. An hour later, at 18:30, the list increases to 21590, 17605, 13700, 11655, 9895, as well as 7120 and 6020 kHz. And that's the same lineup for the final hour of broadcast to Africa at 19:30 UTC.
What a monster list. Well, by the way, the channels of 21590 and 17605 kHz between 18:30 and 19:25 UTC were late additions and are not shown in On Target, but they will be on the air. The popular evening broadcast to Europe on 1512 kHz medium wave moves with the clocks and therefore starts at 20:30 UTC, so 9:30 in the evening in the UK. Media Network airs at 20:50 UTC. And to North America, look for us at 23:30 UTC on 6165 and 9845 kHz for the 2 hour broadcast, and again at 0430 UTC on 6165 and 9590 kHz for the one-hour transmission to the west coast of North America. So, in fact, no changes for those broadcasts in that direction.
Radio Netherlands programmes in English are part of the European bouquet on Asiasat 2 on transponder 10B.
And a growing number of people have started listening to us on the Astra Digital bouquet on Astra 1G transponder 109. Radio Netherlands has two audio channels there, and the second channel carries the majority of our English language programmes. If you have analogue satellite equipment, you'll also find us on Eutelsat Hotbird 1 at 13 degrees east, transponder number 11, that's transponder 11, frequency 11.431 gigahertz, and the audio subcarrier to look for is 7.56 megahertz.
And if you have an internet connection, you can also listen to a growing range of programs in real audio on our internet site. Go to our website at www.rnw.nl and click on the button marked Net Radio.
By the way, Microsoft Corporation is launching its next-generation web browser today, and version 5 of Internet Explorer is apparently going to include an online radio tool that will allow users to press buttons to switch from station to station, similar to the presets on a car radio.
The beta versions of Internet Explorer 5.0 don't have this feature, but the final release will have a radio button in the toolbar, according to several emails we've had from sources working for the company. This button will allow you to click directly to a page offering a customizable online audio tuner, which will offer preset links to audio content from stations like National Public Radio, CNN and the BBC. But you'll also be able to set it up to find Radio Netherlands real audio as well.
In fact, this move is expected to give audio on the web a significant boost, especially for those fortunate enough to have a fast connection, such as at work or at college. The radio application, as part of the browser, is thought to be a better way of promoting audio than asking people to download a separate application or a plugin.
Microsoft is apparently abandoning the idea of channels, though, which was a feature in Explorer 4. But it apparently didn't catch on. But that was mainly because the companies that teamed up with Microsoft were mainstream providers of radio and television already. Why bother to set up special software if you bookmarked your favorite sites already?
Hello, can you hear me? Yeah, over here. I'm a new QSL card from Radio Netherlands. Oh, and I'm stuffed in this top drawer, waiting to be sent out in return for a correct reception report on any of the programs. Do me a favor, drop us a line and let me out. Help!
Now here's something from the mailbag. Joseph Nagy, writing via an email address in Australia, says he's been a great fan of Jonathan Marks for the past 32 years, which is incredible since it implies that Jonathan has been on the radio since he was 8.
Yeah, I think it's about 10 years out, but I'm actually quite flattered. I'll accept I've been on the radio since I was 18, but not much earlier than that. But anyway, what's the real reason for writing?
Well, Joseph needs a technical schematic diagram for a Philips 4 Band Deluxe shortwave portable radio, and he wonders if you could help him get one and what the price would be.
Can't help you personally, I'm afraid, Joseph. Philips is a large multinational and make a wide range of radios, some of which are only sold in certain regions of the world. Since you didn't give us a model number, and that may be because it's not printed on the outside case, it's difficult to know whether this is a radio manufactured by Philips in one of its factories, or whether it's a radio that's been made for Philips by another manufacturer and just sold under the Philips brand.
Philips headquarters in Eindhoven, Holland, told us yesterday that requests for circuit diagrams are only honoured by local national service departments and not by their headquarters in Holland.
The depth of their archive varies per country. In your case, Joseph, you should contact Philips at this address, P.O. Box 9143. Postal code is 40025 in Bombay. That's Philips, P.O. Box 9143. 40025 in Bombay, or phone them on the area code 22 and then 4930311. That's area code 22 and then 4930311. Between 30 and 50 new stations are likely to appear soon on a limited number of channels on the medium wave band here in Europe. Steve Witt's on the line from his home in the east of England. He's actively involved in the Medium Wave Circle, a non-profit organisation that specialises in monitoring and reporting about the medium wave band. He's back on the wireless after last week's discussion about medium wave in North America to talk about Europe.
Europe is an interesting position on medium wave because in some countries, medium wave is almost non-existent. Estonia, I believe, medium wave has been dropped altogether. And in many other countries, only one or two channels are used by the public broadcasters. The two exceptions, really, to that model are Spain and Great Britain, where medium wave is widely used by local broadcasters. And it's maybe going in various cycles. In the Netherlands, for example, a number of small local stations have just recently been licensed for medium wave use, which was a bit of a surprise.
Mind you, we understand that one of those stations has actually given the frequencies back, hoping they'll get an FM allocation instead.
I think, Jonathan, you're referring to Radio Hopper, which was one of the licensees in the Netherlands. And it was interesting to see during the last few months that medium wave licenses were being granted in a number of countries when the general trend has, as you rightly say, been towards FM. Many stations perceive that FM is the way forward because of its perceived higher quality of audio, whereas maybe a decade ago that was less the case. However, in the United Kingdom, there has been a history of offering licenses for low-powered special event stations. In recent months now, the Radio Communications Agency has started licensing permanent low-power AM stations in the UK, and that's quite a change of direction here.
University Radio York proudly presents another facile pop programme.
That's from the archives. In Britain, the only way to get one of these new on-air licences is by providing a community service of interest to a specialised group. It could be students in the university, military personnel at an army barracks, or patients in a hospital. The way the legislation's looking, it's unlikely, though, that music stations, such as the famous Radio Caroline, would qualify.
For many years, since the 1960s, a large number of our universities and colleges here have run inductive loop limited area broadcasting systems on the medium wave band. These run coaxial cable round the campus sites and through tower block buildings in which students live so that they can listen on normal transistor radios on frequencies such as 999 and 945 kilohertz on the medium wave band. However, because of the inductive loop nature of the transmitters, the radiated signal cannot transmit very far, and indeed it is the terms of the license that it should be barely audible outside the boundaries of the campus.
But this leaky feeder system must be rather expensive to set up and maintain.
It always has been, and reception has never been fantastic. Often at night time, as we would expect on medium wave, students try to receive their student broadcasts in the halls of residence, find their signal swamped by European higher power signals. Of course, it is also expensive because there's cabling that has to be put into every building. It has indeed been quite an expensive proposition, but a successful one. Now, however, the position is changing such that freely radiating transmissions are being permitted from selected establishments. And right now, somewhere between 30 and 50 organisations in the UK have applied for licences to operate such stations.
Now, why don't they get an FM licence with a very low power?
That was a deliberate restriction implied by the Radio Communications Agency that all of these community stations would be operated on medium wave.
Why? They don't need the audio quality?
I think it was mainly down to available spectrum, because if you examine the sort of programming these stations will put out, they will undoubtedly be quite a high music content. All along, in fact, in the history of restricted service licences in the UK, you could apply for a licence either on medium wave or FM, and all along, the medium wave ones were treated as the cheaper option.
Now, you mentioned these licences being given away for hospital radio stations, university radio stations. These are long-term. Does that mean the end of the short-term licences?
I don't believe that's the case. There's no public statement that says short-term licences are going to disappear. I firmly believe they will continue. Indeed, there is a published intent by the Radio Authority here to specially licence a whole range of temporary stations to celebrate the millennium, and in particular these stations are intended to be aligned to major celebrations, parties, events being held around the country. The only issue that this does, of course, throw up is that with permanent stations occupying frequencies, It makes the frequency planning of the temporary station somewhat more difficult. This is not a cheap business. The applicants not only have to pay a fee to the licensing authorities, they have to make sure that they are covered from the point of view of copyright protection to the music copyright holders. And so to operate one of these stations, typically, certainly for a 28-day temporary station, one really needs to have a budget measuring £10,000 plus. This is not just a little hobby on a shoestring.
Steve Witt, who adds that a new station in Great Yarmouth on the coast of East Anglia is doing quite well on 1350 kHz at the moment. Radio Yare turns out to be an easy DX catch in Holland, Germany and Scandinavia, mainly because the transmitter is about 1 kilometre from the North Sea coast and medium wave signals travel enormous distances across water.
Media Networks Medium Wave Test Laboratory. Up high in the mountains of Hilversum, 18 meters above sea level, Jonathan Marks has been playing with a giant loop contraption. Do not attempt to try this in your own home. Jonathan is a trained audio professional.
Okay, so Jonathan, you'd better explain what's been going on.
Well, here comes a summary of the test results on a very special radio now being marketed in the United States by a mail-order house in California. C. Crame has partnered with the Taiwanese receiver manufacturer of Sanjin to make a digital medium-wave radio with a difference.
At first glance, this radio looks like many other kitchen radios you'll find on the market. Weighing in at 2 kilos, including 4D-size batteries that clip into the back of the set, this radio measures 29 by 9 by 16 centimetres. The front control could not be simpler. Up and down buttons allow you to tune the radio in 10 kHz steps on medium wave.
That matches the fact that medium wave stations in the Caribbean and the Americas are 10 kHz apart on the dial. In Europe and other parts of the world, where there's a 9 kHz spacing, you need to use the manual tuning knob on the side of the receiver, which allows tuning in increments of 1 kHz.
There's an FM band between 87.5 to 108 MHz. There's nothing extraordinary about that part of the radio. And we found performance is fine for a portable, though it's only in mono, even on headphones.
You can also listen to television sound, which only really works in North America and parts of Australasia. And the radio also monitors certain VHF channels set aside in North America for emergency weather broadcasts. These are channels around 162 MHz.
In Jonathan's listening tests, he picked a suburban location about 45 kilometres away from two 400 kilowatt medium wave transmitters, which means the local signals are strong but shouldn't cause overloading on a good receiver, and that was the case here.
We put the CC radio next to a purely analogue set, the General Electric World Monitor 2, and did several late-night listening sessions in February and early March hunting for transatlantic signals. We made use of a loop antenna from Kiwa, as well as using the radio's built-in ferrite rod. The results were quite clear.
The CC radio had better selectivity. You can separate stations better. It's easier to find and accurately tune the CC radio because the dial calibration on the World Monitor 2 is very coarse indeed. But the background noise generated by the synthesizer on the CC radio was noticeably higher than on the analog World Monitor 2. And that means that having found a weak station, it was not as easy to monitor the contents of the program on the CC radio. Mind you, we're talking about using this radio for long-distance listening.
Most people who buy such a radio are simply looking for a great sound on AM or medium wave, and both these sets confirm there is good fidelity to be found on AM. It's just that most receiver manufacturers neglect the AM portion of the dial when they're designing receivers or hi-fi tuners, with the result that many programs sound like they're being broadcast through a tube, like those horrible plastic headphones that some airlines still dish out.
One other small point. If they ever make a new version of this receiver, then they should put a decent handle on it. The one on this set now is simply a lump of plastic and makes the whole set top-heavy.
We put these findings to Bob Crane, on the line from a remote part of California, and asked him to compare the CC radio with the General Electric World Monitor radio, a set which is highly regarded in North America, and both are sold by this company.
The GE Super Radio is an excellent radio. In fact, we have that still in our mail order catalog. You know, we have the DX crowd, and they're they know their radios and they know their equipment, and the GE Super 2 is rated higher than the Super 3. But also, curiously, Jonathan, it's actually the GE Super 1, which I have never tried, that apparently is one of the best radios ever made, and according to some of the DX experts, better than RCC radio. But the GE Super 3 is somewhat of a step down from the Super 2, from what we understand. But our target market was really quite different than what the GE Super 2 and 3, even though we do have in common the goal of, you know, excellent AM reception.
So who do you hope to reach with the CC radio?
Okay, the CC radio is specifically made for the talk show market, where the rich man, the poor man, can listen to each other talk and communicate nationwide because of our big networks and the way AM propagates at night, where you can listen to a station 1,500 miles away. Talk radio doesn't necessarily have to have full fidelity for music. It's mainly for voice. So that's another change we had, was we made the speaker not full fidelity, and it does sound good on music, but we made it for legibility of the human voice, so you can understand the words better.
Does that mean also using sharper filters than you'd find on a standard AM radio?
Oh, yes. And audio filters are much sharper than a standard AM radio.
And you've also got the weather band as well.
The weather band is extremely important in some of their tornado and hurricane areas. Here on the west coast of California, once in a while we need it. We live in earthquake country. We have severe earthquakes here in Fortuna, California. But I'll tell you, a tornado scares the heck out of me compared to any earthquake.
But why does the radio cost $160? I mean, that's quite expensive compared to some of the analog radios, like, for example, the Super Radio from GE.
Part of the reason is, if you look at any radio and you look at the weight of it and the power supply, all the way through you have a larger expense. The power supply, of course, the audio amplifier has to be beefier. That's really one of the primary differences between all radios. The cost goes up dramatically anytime you increase the power. The $99 radio sounds good, but when it gets into that thump, the real sharp notes, then the cheaper radio falls flat. You do have to pay a premium for that. There was a lot of development cost on the CC radio. It's very difficult to bring the noise level down on a digital radio. All the other components of a modern electronic radio, many of them produce noise, radio noise in the background. And it's easy to make a radio sensitive, but to bring the background noise of a radio down below what you normally would find is not an easy task. There's extra shielding here and there. To be quite frank, at one point we didn't think it could be done.
But how is AM radio doing in general in the United States? I mean, is it all in the end being superseded by FM and maybe even digital systems?
Jonathan, this is the funniest part. If you care to read the back of some of the big books, what format is number one in the United States, for a long time it was FM rock. And just last year, talk radio is number one format in the United States, Jonathan.
It seems this radio may be marketed at a later date in Australia and Europe under the Sanjian or Roberts brand name, but a final decision has not yet been made. In the meantime, for more information, you can contact C. Crane Company at this address, 1001 Main Street, Fortuna, California, 95540. That's 1001 Main Street, Fortuna, California, 95540. And the phone number is 1 for the US, then 707-725-9000. 707-725-9000. And they have a website at www.ccrane.com. And today's comments on the CC radio will appear in our receiver shopping list in the course of April.
And that's it for the moment. We're back next week. In the meantime, input on our output is always welcome.
So it's back soon. Goodbye for now.
Media Network is a Radio Netherlands presentation. Copyright 1999. All rights reserved.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.